my goodness. It's another episode of And Introducing Hitting Your RSS Feeds. It's another And Introducing where we are veering away from words about music and we're veering toward words with musicians, aka an interview with a musician. And Introducing and interviewing and interviewing. I don't know. We're working on it. Today on the pod, we are talking to Patrick J. Smith. He is a New York-based musician who has recorded as A Beacon School since 2009. He put out his debut album, Cola, in 2021. And he just released his second album, Yo-Yo, in October of 2023. He's also in the band Max Band with Max Savage from Parquet Courts. I think we can call them a friend of the pod. He's gearing up for some live shows this spring across the country, across the United States. We had him on to talk release day, streaming dashboards, Dunkin' Donuts disasters, getting kicked out of the venue so the late show can start, remix culture, and much, much more. So keep listening.
Hi, and welcome to And Introducing, a podcast about words, about music. I'm Chris Wade.
I'm Molly O'Brien.
And introducing, he is alternately known by his musical moniker, A Beacon School. But today we are joined by Patrick J. Smith, who is A Beacon School. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Is that a Yankees hat on? You're a Yankees fan?
It is.
Yeah. Is this natural?
Yeah, I am a big Yankees fan. I'm like obsessively refreshing Twitter while talking to you. Trying to get Yankees updates.
Yankees news and updates. Yankees Vivo official.
Exactly.
Yankees Vivo official. So Patrick, we first met you after seeing A Beacon School. When was that, Molly? 2019, 2020? Was it post-pandemic?
We saw you post-pandemic. I think we met you at a Parquet Courts show.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, we met at the lot. The
was that Music
show.
Hall of Williamsburg, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever year their last record came out, we met at the release show. That's right.
Yeah.
So I think 2 years ago now.
And then we caught one of your shows post, you know, not post pandemic, but post vax, I think. I think it was at the Sultan Room.
Yep.
Yeah. And now you have a new album.
That's right. Finally.
So
I keep being reminded
that it's been a few years. Well, I mean, the project kind of took off for you with the Cola album, and that was 2018, correct?
It was, yeah. And then we re-released it a year later with more songs.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the experience like of that kind of blowing up to a certain level for you? I always like to ask, like, you know, when did you feel like, okay, a Beacon School can be my life?
I don't know if that has happened yet, to be honest with you. But yeah. There definitely was like a lot of, it was honestly, to be told, like, I put the record out with a tiny label. We didn't even print it on physical. And it honestly was just like this one YouTube channel posted a song and it like wormed its way into the YouTube algorithm and got like 15 million plays suddenly.
Wild.
And yeah, you know, I've had other people ask me, how do you do that? I have no idea. total fluke. But yeah. And then, similar, like, I guess, like, most of it's just through the internet, you know, Spotify, YouTube, dust, internet people. I think there's, like, a corner of the internet who thinks I'm, like, much more successful than I am. Because if you have a lot of plays on YouTube and Spotify, that means you're famous. But, yeah, definitely appreciate having listeners, but I definitely do not feel like I've made it. By any means.
I had to say, when we saw you play the Sultan Room, I struck up a random conversation with an attendee, and I think I was just like, how did you end up here? And he had said that he had listened to a Beacon School song that was on like a Spotify playlist, and like and set, then got like one of those like Spotify email notifications that's like a thing you like is coming to your town, and like bought a ticket. I'm like, that is the craziest. Like, that's like a real like streaming to real fan conversion. I don't think I've ever like seen that before.
I know. I like that's the biggest thing these days is like, yes, seeing how that like converts. Like, do people who find you on the internet actually like want to come see you in person? So when I hear about that, it's like kind of a relief, you know?
Yeah, because I feel like the suspicion, the creeping suspicion, at least, you know, same with me doing internet content, is like, you know, at a certain point, you're just looking at numbers on a player go up and you're like, is this real? Do any of these, you know, play count people actually exist? Or is this just, you know, some kind of weird machination of an algorithm that is telling me that people are listening to this without, you know, those people actually existing? So you've toured on Beacon School a few times?
We've always done like mini, like little runs here and there, but we're doing this time around, like trying to actually tour. So in April, we're going to do our first ever like consistent run of over. We've only done like three shows at a time. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or in and flew out to LA, did one, or just played in New York where we live. But trying to do an actual tour in April. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. So I guess what I was going to ask is like, you know, it's something that, as you described, kind of blew up as an internet thing or on a random YouTube channel. Like, does it make it feel more, I don't know, real when you're actually out playing shows and you're like, oh, people show up for this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like, it's definitely very validating meeting actual people. I feel like everyone talks about how like disposable, you know, content mm-hmm. can be. So mm-hmm. like someone actually making the effort to come meet you and or just come see the shows, obviously, like, feels great. Better than being like, oh, yeah, this is on my yoga playlist or something. Yes. Okay.
I was gonna ask, because I've seen kind of as a theme, like, musicians talking about the names of playlists they get added to. Have you seen any, like, particular ones that you're like, oh geez, what the hell? You know, but I'm referencing specifically the artist Pacing saying that she loves getting put on playlists that are like the teeny tiniest little band that we found under a rock that no one cares about. Like, I don't know if you have anything thematic like that.
I haven't had those playlist names that made me laugh, but I do get that message a lot that like, holy shit, you are so under like appreciated, like so underrated, like, oh my god, no one knows you, you're so small. I'm like, okay, I get it, thank you. Like, wow, no one knows you.
You know, I kind of appreciate where that impulse is coming from like a fan or a listener being like, you know, more people should know about you, but it also kind of, you can't help but feel that it comes from a place of being like, I'm sending this because I am cool enough to know you, and sending this email actually makes me feel better because I am going through the act of appreciating a underrepresented artist or something like that, you know?
Right, exactly. I would much more appreciate someone being like, I told all my friends, yes, I'm going to tell everyone about you, rather than being like, you should be more successful.
Yeah. Like, you should just email back and be like, great, you are drafted into a Beacon School street team. Here's exactly. a PDF for some stickers. Go put them up around your town.
Exactly. Although, that side note, I do have like a weird superstition about stickers.
Oh, yeah?
It's
yeah.
A running kind of like theory of mine is that like you are cursed if you make stickers for your band.
Interesting. Because okay.
I've never seen a sticker on a door or like anywhere of a band I know.
Wow.
Like, it's always just like the failed bands of history. Yes. On like bathroom doors.
Oh shit.
And you know what?
You never see like a Vampire Weekend sticker on a bathroom
no.
door.
No,
fuck,
exactly.
This is mind blowing.
I totally know what you're talking about, because there are, I mean, you're based in New York. You know, we were in New York for a long time. There are those few things that are graffitied everywhere that you just become second knowledge. And the one I'm thinking of that first comes to mind, I'm sure both of you have seen these. Peru, Anna, Anna, Peru.
Is that a band? Mm. What is that?
I don't know what it is, but I've seen that graffitied or stickered on 1,000 bathroom walls in New York, and I have never taken the time to actually look it up. It exists purely in the realm of something that you see graffitied on a door. And so that phrase is burnt into my brain, but I've never actually pursued any information about it, which I think supports your negative theory of stickers.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I agree. I think it's the same with graffiti because I'm like, friends of friends of friends are graffiti people. And I'm like, they're always tagging stuff. And I'm like, I've never once read graffiti. I just see, oh, that's graffiti.
Yeah.
I'm not like, what? Who's like Sandal or something? I don't know. Like, I don't even read it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. That fits with my theory that once you like put anything on your walls, like art or posters, you immediately become like inured to it. And like, you don't care anymore because like it just becomes background in your life. So the stickerification of bands is maybe it's a no go. Yeah. So no A Beacon School stickers in the merch pack. Do you have merch ready to go for tour, or is that in development?
I have shirts. I need to make more. I did posters last time. Which were people love posters. It's fun. Like, you know, we're talking about like the business of being in a band or something. It's funny. Yeah. Like, kind of learning what people want. I enjoy the aspect of kind of doing my own mini market research.
Yes.
Being like, note it, posters, they're in. Posters are in. Small t-shirts are out.
Okay.
No one buys smalls. Everyone's running baggy.
It's true. That's me as well.
Every time I order t-shirts, it's like a fun game of, I used to just do flat numbers per size.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm trying to dial it in so specifically where they all run out at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's go 11 mediums, 26 larges, like 22 extra larges. I'm just trying to figure out my audience's like size.
So speaking of like having to do your own market research, the band is, you know, the band org is just you, correct?
Exactly.
You're the primary shot caller of A Beacon School.
I am. Yeah.
We should talk about the music itself and how you put it together and stuff. But, you know, it's interesting that from what I've read and understand, you can talk about your process a little bit. You know, it's the albums itself are mostly just you and a computer, or for the new one, you and a computer and then going into the studio a little bit to do some of the drums.
Exactly.
So what is the process like as you're moving from putting this all together, basically yourself in a room, to moving towards getting the album out and now taking this out in front of people?
Yeah, it's definitely... The idea was always, this is just going to be my thing. I've played in a lot of bands, you know, where it has all the great things of being in a band, but then also like that, like the bad things, like all the compromise. And so this was always just going to be my thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, that needs to be extremely clear to the people I'm playing with, you know, not in like a, not trying to be a dick, or just like literally just to avoid that awkward conversation of someone being like, what if it went like this? I'm like, it's just, so it's like, but because of that, it means like, I'm very aware of that, you know? So I'm doing all like the legwork. I'm not, you know,
you're trying to set all your players up for success by knowing what you want them to be doing before.
Exactly. Scheduling everything, kind of paying for everything. Like, you know, just make it very clear. But yeah, I guess, so now it's a matter of figuring out with our setup of, you know, two guitars, drums, bass, how we're going to perform the song. I'd say half of them we can do just as a normal like rock combo.
Yeah.
And then the other half is figuring out like what we're going to put on a backing track and then learning how to play to that backing track. So it's a lot.
Are you thinking about that at all as you're composing these songs, like how they might translate into a live setting, or is it just purely what's in the box?
It's, yeah, I'm not thinking about it at all. Just practically, the live aspect has been such a smaller. I know. I have so many more people have heard my music online than have ever seen it live. But, you know, we obviously think about the live thing, but I would never be like, ooh, that's a cool part, but I don't know how I'm going to pull it off. No.
Yeah.
It's just go. I'll figure it out later.
So what, talk us through release day for Yo-Yo. Like what is an average album release day for you now that you've gone through a couple?
This one was really good. It was unseasonably warm. It's October 13th. Yeah. And also like, because up until very recently I was booking everything for myself. I booked the release show way too late in the year.
Okay.
October was like fully filled up because it's Rocktober. That's what I've since learned. And everyone is playing in New York. So I couldn't get a release show until like weeks later. So the release show was 2 weeks after the release. But that meant the day of release, I was just hanging out. That was great. I wasn't worrying about the show that night or anything. I was just on my phone, just soaking up all the nice comments.
This is what I was going to ask. Are you watching the numbers go up? Are you watching people,
watching the
tweets roll in, stuff like that? I feel like it goes one way or the other. I am a very obsessive comment reader. When we put out like podcast episodes, I gotta see what people are saying. I try to convince myself that I'm looking for, if there's any like technical mistakes, errors in each individual podcast episode. Obviously different from a podcast to an album, because I can go back and like fix things, but it's really just to see what people are saying about the show. But then I think some people are like, I have to totally disconnect from any kind of feedback for a certain period of time.
I am definitely, I'm the former. I'm with you. I am reading every iota of content about myself, just obsessively refreshing. And then, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if Spotify gives you a live stat count for a week after you release something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did not know that.
I always wonder if they stop it after a week for like internal logistical reasons or for like mental health.
Yeah. Like if you're watching this for more than, it's like, you know, when you're, playing, what was it? Was it like Wii or something? If you played it too long, it was like, stop, go outside, take a walk.
Yeah, it's seriously, after a week of just being like first thing in the morning, just watching the number go up. But no, I definitely was in, reading everything. I'm trying to think what I did that night. Oh, my friend's birthday party.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, it was just like very chill. It was like everything, all the preparation happened. I didn't have to do anything. I had to do my Instagram post in the morning.
Yes.
And that's like the big, I was like, Kate, what should I post? I need like a picture of myself.
Yeah.
And we had this whole idea. So Kate, my girlfriend, is like obsessed with Dunkin' Donuts. She gets it every morning, her coffee, her dunks. We had this idea. She got me Dunkin', to celebrate. And I have stamps of like the album cover or album name and stuff. And I was going to stamp it on the Dunkin' bag or whatever. And like that was going to be the post. And then I, for some reason, opened the coffee and I just spilled iced coffee all over everywhere. Like spent the first like 30 minutes of the day just mopping up iced coffee.
Damn.
And we're like, we're not going to read into this. This is not an omen. This is nothing. This is
fine.
I think it's
a good, it's like rain on your wedding day.
Totally.
It's like spilled exactly Dunkin' on your release day. What's your, what is your Dunkin' order and what is Kate's Dunkin' order?
Every day it's a different, I'm pretty traditional. Okay. I go iced coffee, two cream, one sugar, maybe no sugar.
Yeah.
Or Kate loves the flavors.
Yeah.
She's experimenting. We're going peppermint mocha, cookie butter. Cookie butter is like the new one. We haven't tried the ice spice one because I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like bonkers. It has cut up munchkin donuts in it.
It looks pretty intense. It looks pretty sludgy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, it's so easy for Duncan to go like cloyingly sweet. You have to be really careful.
Yeah.
You know?
Completely agree.
Yeah, Chris has had some disasters.
I feel like I'm always on the ledge with Duncan. Even as much as I like it, it's like, you know, one more pump and it could be something that my body just rejects.
Exactly. It goes from being like bitter with a little bit of sweet to just straight sweet.
Yeah.
I always think that I'm like, it's weird that coffee is so popular in America because it's so bitter. And then you realize most people are drinking it with like 14 scoops of cookie butter.
Yeah. No wonder people gotta have their Dunkin'.
Exactly. The
chaotic Dunkin' bit is that they have like unsweetened flavors, which is how I ended up ordering a blueberry coffee once. That was weirdly good. I would highly recommend that.
I think they call that the flavor swirl.
Swirl.
Yeah, the swirl. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm, the swirl, the coconut swirl is really good. I recommend that one too.
Great. Well, we moved to LA and there are Dunkin's here, but certainly not
much harder. It's more of a Starbucks city.
Certainly not within walking distance, which is half of the appeal of the New York City Dunkin', is that there's got to be one within like three blocks.
Oh yeah, we've got options.
Where was your release show when it did happen after Rocktober ended?
It was at Elsewhere Zone One.
Ooh,
we love Elsewhere.
It was fun. Yeah, it was great. Another thing I ran into, you know, is that every small venue now is double booking every show. Or like every night.
So they do an early and a late.
So you get an early and a late. So sold out show, you're feeling good. You want to go meet people. And then those like house lights, boom, like get out.
Wow, that's brutal. I didn't even think of that that concept of, you know, ruining the post show vibes of being like, sorry,
exactly.
It's a Taylor Swift dance party now. You all need to fucking leave.
I mean,
exactly.
One would hope that it, you know, the optimistic way would be like, hey, we're so many live bands are getting shows. We love to see, you know, bands succeed, but, you know, getting kicked out, yes, for a Taylor Swift dance party or something like that.
It was a DJ set. It was a DJ. Yeah.
So many DJs.
You know,
some might say too many DJs.
Too many DJs.
Are you at the level where you can choose? Are you making rider requests? Is this something that is in your bandwidth,
no.
Or is it the standardized spread?
You get what we give you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were not asked. We got some water.
Damn. They drink tickets.
Yeah. We got drink tickets. Well, that's the other thing too, is I can't drink before I play.
Okay.
And so then I got kicked out after we played. So I'm just leaving with a pocket full of drink tickets.
Is drinking a thing where it affects like the skill, like, you know, your chops, for example?
Or is it more mental?
Or is it a mental thing or some combination of both?
I think for me, it's like having to sing and remember lots of stuff and be precise. I'm like, yeah, if I wasn't singing, I would. In other bands where I don't have to sing, I'm like, whatever. Fuck
yeah.
Me. Yeah.
Hook me up, bartender. But in this one, I'm like, I'm just too nervous. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get stage fright?
Oh, totally. Especially like, I think the more you play, the more autopilot it is. But this was our first time playing a lot of these songs. And I'm kind of.
Is the new iteration of the band or the band that you've got together for this album, is it new people from the last time you played? Is it a significantly different experience from when you did shows for Cola? Like,
it's always changing. Like I said, like, it's basically been my buddy Chase who plays with me. He does all the videos. He's like one of my best friends. He's been with me doing the band for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And then everyone, the drummer and guitar player, it's always kind of rotating just based on who can do it. Like I said, like, because it's my thing. And like, also, like, people have lives and there's not that much money in this. It's kind of just like, who can do this? Like,
yeah.
For instance, in April, our guitar player has a job and he can't leave for a week. So it's like, okay, now I'm trying to find someone else that can do it. So yeah, it's like slowly, it's just kind of whack-a-mole. It's like one person leaves, you replace them, and someone else, and
Can I talk some numbers for a little bit? Like what capacity venues are you hitting up in April?
So we're doing small. We're doing a small run, like your baby's all right, you know, yeah. your 150s. Oh, yeah. As this is like our first tour, we're keeping it small, seeing how it goes. The good news is it's like LA, the West Coast stuff is selling really well.
Nice.
As my internal metrics would have led me to believe, LA and Spotify, you can see your demos, and LA is always uh-huh. like our people.
Mm-hmm.
And then good old New York, just too cool to buy tickets, you know.
What the fuck?
My hometown.
I really feel like that might be because, you know, as we were just saying, there's so many shows. I feel like New York is a big city of being like, I'm not going to decide what I do on Saturday until like the Thursday of that week, you know?
Especially for a show at this level. It's like, I feel like I haven't bought a ticket ahead of time for something in years.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a big show.
And also just talking about numbers, going back to like release day, you know, you say that you're looking at your streaming numbers go up. What, you know, as a musician, as a band, what are the numbers that are most important to you? Are you looking mostly at streams? Are you looking at like Bandcamp sales? Was there even a physical release for the new album? And like, are you tracking that as well? Like, well, like in your, you know, cosmology of how people consume your music, what is the order of importance?
Definitely there was a physical release. Yeah. We didn't do one the first time around because for Colo, like we didn't know if anyone would buy it. We didn't want to have the old box of records.
Sure.
You know, the very sad box of records that no one's buying. So we released it on vinyl a year later and we're like, okay, someone will buy this. This time, yeah, we did. We printed like 1,000 records and we sold out our limited edition version, and that's going well. I would say for me, and I have to think that this is universal, you're looking at that monthly listeners number on Spotify. Because I just feel like for better or for worse, probably for worse, that's just how people like instantly gauge the popularity of an artist.
Yeah.
Having like learned about how that all works is like, it's just unique listeners. So it doesn't matter how many times those people actually listened.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want, I don't know, you're looking at all of it really, but I'd say as far as like wanting to appear successful and therefore be, you know,
yeah,
you want that monthly listeners number to go up. But yeah, I'd say, unfortunately, that's the one that seems to matter the most.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's like, you know, I'm sure you're on Bandcamp and you actually like get the money directly from those sales, but it is like, I feel as you're monitoring the band's success and you're growing, yeah, as you're saying, what's critically important for you right now is the appearance of broad popularity, which can be, I assume your thought is that can be translated into wider release strategies and, I don't know, maybe sync opportunities and, you know,
totally.
More, you know, just the kind of head of steam behind the band as an entity right now, more than, you know, the actual transactions coming in.
Totally. I mean, the thing I've really learned, like, is just basically just trying to convince people to care about your band, you know?
Yeah.
And you kind of have to use every, it's almost like a coast, like, look, other people care, like, oh, it's just like, it sucks and it's so like against my nature, but it is just a constant. It's like that, you know, hyping yourself up, bragging, like just trying to like lead with someone to give a shit about me. Like, it's like fighting. I swear.
It sounds like you're really acting a lot like you're, you know, your own manager here. And I mean, I think you might have answered that a little bit, but, you know, does that part of it come naturally to you? I mean, from what I'm hearing is, you know, it's always awkward to self-promote, but it seems like you are keenly interested in managing like the numbers aspect and like tracking all that stuff and thinking strategically about how to place, you know, how to position things. I mean, yeah. How do you feel about doing that work on your own behalf?
I mean, someone's got to do it. I would love to have a whole support team, but I don't mind doing it, I guess. Yeah, you end up wearing a ton of different hats, I think, as like a band.
Mm-hmm.
I especially a one man band with like, no, I have an agent now, which is great. I don't have to go find shows for myself.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of like, I never really thought about it. It's just like, no one else is doing this, so I'll have to do it. But it is funny when you see bands come out with like a whole team, like right off the, right off the jump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't help but be like, what the fuck?
I was listening to a podcast. I won't name the artist or the podcast, but a very, very young major label artist who basically just had never had to do anything himself. And like, he was getting to the point where it was like, yeah, you know, I spend all my money on DoorDash and I ordered like $10,000 worth of DoorDash in a month. Like that kind of a vibe.
Oh my God.
Then I'm like, on one hand, I'm like, oh man, this kid has not ground to the level that some have, but also it would be totally nice to just order a like Taco Bell DoorDash for every meal. Like it really saves your brain for the creative part of the music, I would assume.
Totally. I mean, I think it'd just be really nice to have other people dealing with the annoying stuff that you don't want to deal with. I'm always like amazed at how sometimes like people will put out albums really fast, like one a year or something, and I'm like, how did they? And then I'm like, oh, they've got like an army of people working on this stuff. Basically, if I'm not working on it, it's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, that ascribes to, I think, the rule that Chris and I live by in our creative lives, which is that no one's going to do the job better than you.
Yeah.
And if you want it done right, you have to do it yourself. So
honestly, that's like 100% my experience.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I've hired other people to do stuff and I always end up just being like, let me fix it. Like, it's totally. Just like, yeah, I don't know. Control freak.
Well, we've been talking a lot about like you know, the numbers, the structure, and everything. I feel like we should talk about the music itself. I've been really digging the new album. There's some stuff on it that I think is kind of you know, new innovations for what a Beacon School can do. But you know, how would you describe what the music of a Beacon School is?
It's really hard. Thank you, first of all. I appreciate that. It's but yeah, it's hard to describe. I would say it's just like very vaguely indie music that branches in a few different directions. There's indie rock, electronic, but I do think there's kind of a emotional through line between it all. I think it's all tends to be kind of happy.
I mean, I guess it might have been a bit of a leading question, because I kind of wanted to ask you what you felt about the terms dream pop and bedroom pop, which I've seen it tossed around, which I've you know, I was checking out a few of the previous interviews, and I feel like a lot of the you know, the intro paragraph to it, I use those terms, and I was just wondering how you feel about those labels,
or just labels in general,
yeah,
or genres in general,
yeah, genres, pro or con.
Are we in a post genre world? Discuss.
Man, that's a lot of questions. Dream pop. It's just kind of, it's like the words just get used until they don't mean anything, right? Like I've noticed like shoegaze now means any like dreamy music. I've been watching like a ton of guitar pedal videos.
I'll put a pin in that because I want to talk gear later.
Yeah. And they were just like ultimate shoegaze setup. And it's just like a reverb pedal. And I'm like, that's not. It's not shoegaze. That's just reverb. That's so I don't know. Bedroom pop. It's like it kind of makes me, because I know I get clumped in with that stuff, and I probably am. I'm sure. I think I'm like, that's not me. I'm so different. But I'm sure for most people, they're like, yeah, you're dream pop, bedroom pop.
It's kind of interesting. because I feel like that describes more of a production method than an actual sound, which is like, yeah, you made this album in your house, but does that necessarily mean, you know? But that's also interesting to describe like a method of production rather than the final sound. I think that those are like valid ways to group music as well.
Totally. I feel like it's kind of like almost more like a vibe descriptor than anything. If you something was bedroom pop, I kind of have an idea of what it's just going to be like, warbly, dreamy, like faux retro sounding. But I don't know. Like, I really am just trying to get to the point of someone just listening to it. I feel like that's always been my kind of thing. It's just like music first.
Yeah.
Just listen to it. Like, that's why I've always done black and white covers. I'm like, I just want to leave it as like open as possible to get to the point of listening to it and like letting that kind of fill in the whole picture. Obviously that's hard in a world where like there's so much music and you have to get someone there, but I don't know about genre stuff. It's all kind of
well,
that's interesting to me, because I do feel like, especially kind of in the current, at least like social media moment for music, is that everything has to be hyper specific in order to be categorize in order to be like kind of put in these like very specific lanes. Like, I mean, I feel like the shoegaze video that you mentioned is a perfect example of that, where it's like shoegaze core.
The memification of shoegaze is just like one of the funniest music trends of the last 3 years. It's a like of all micro genres to pull out and become like hyper obsessed over. I mean, I guess it'd be, again, I totally agree with you that I think that in the end, people are trying to put a pretentious, smart sounding name on being like, I like when the guitars have reverb.
Sure.
Just put it all under reverb, reverb core.
I feel like it reminds me of like when a slang term gets, you know, into a commercial, that's like the end of its life.
Yes.
Like the other day we're watching, there's a commercial where they're using the term, like, I don't know, T-Mobile's the GOAT.
Yes.
And I'm man. Like the phrase "goat" is just
it's over.
It's done.
And I feel like right now, just watching this really nerdy Christian rock guy be like, "This is your ultimate shoegaze setup. Here's how And I'm just like, okay, that term is just means nothing.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, I don't know. I think it's just a fun thing for people to I think it's like Anthony Fantano.
Yeah.
Just like people who like to talk about music more than like listen to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Muso vibes.
I mean, the genre stuff is difficult because it is like you want to be able to accurately describe what something sounds like to pitch it to people, to get people to listen. If you like this, then you'll like this. If you're a fan of this genre, this is a really good example of it.
Do you buy into any of that? Sorry to step on your question, but like that's another promotional thing that I've noticed of being like for fans of blah, blah, and blah. Is that, have you partaken in any of this or been like, felt like it's, you're pressured to in order to have things hit online?
I don't have to, we do hire a publicist. And I do see what he writes.
Yeah.
And I'll be afraid, read if you like, and I'll see like who he's, and I'll be like, all right, whatever. I don't think it sounds like that, but
but you just let him run with it anyway. Like you're like good
totally.
Enough.
Totally. Like interesting. Like I said, just trying to get like to the point where someone listens to the song.
Yeah.
I've put so much work into making the song sound like how I want. Like that is what I don't know. Could clickbait someone into listening to it, like Fine by Me. I just like really, want to get to that point, and hopefully that wins someone over.
Yeah. Sorry. No,
I was just going to continue musing that the genre stuff, again, it's like the people who email you saying like, oh, you're so, underappreciated. it's mostly, I think like lots of genre discussions mostly think people to, the purpose of it is to make the consumer feel smart and well informed rather than to actually accurately
describe
music and anything. But that's a screed.
Yeah. I think
in general, like people want to, like, why do people generalize anything? Like they're trying to organize a ton of information into a way that makes sense,
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make sense of way too many bands. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And
I need this to all be organized into like a tree.
Yes, exactly. And I mean,
it's too chaotic otherwise.
It's understandable, especially in this era where you have total access to every single song ever recorded instantaneously. You have to figure out ways to make sense of things.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk about the song John?
Yeah.
On the new record. I really like that one.
We were talking about it last night. We're like, we need to scream at Patrick that you need to go full techno for
part of the project. Like,
I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. Is that where the kind of your direction here is going a little bit? I mean, you know, it all feels very much of a piece, the whole record, like obviously, but that one stands out as like, oh, this is something new from the band. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, where'd that impulse come from? How'd that song come together? Yeah, what do you think about it?
I really like that song. That's probably the one I felt the most stoked about putting out, which is why we put it out with the album announcement. I always have made electronic music. I always like blame Ben Gibbard for making it. I grew up with the idea that you had to have your electronic side project.
Uh-huh.
Ever since the Postal Service.
Right.
Totally. I'm like, you do your indie band and then you do your electronic music.
Yeah.
And then I realized that was silly. So I was like, or also just so hard. It's like, I don't want to have one successful band. I want to have two.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's just put this all under the same kind of name and just like trust that it will make sense because it's all coming from the same person.
Yeah.
Like, despite my best efforts, it's all going to have my like DNA.
Yeah.
Fingerprints all over it.
Mm-hmm.
When It's Late basically got really popular on the last album. That was like the first little like toe into the water of electronic music, and that was the most popular song, so that was a big thumbs up to kind of keep going with that. I just was decided to like that one started out kind of more like a normal indie guitar song and then started like sliding that way. And I have my friend Max is like a huge dance music guy, and he was like my consultant on that. I was like, we like playing him. I'm like, because my whole thing was like, I don't want this to be like indie electronic song. I'm like, sure. I want, you know, this is cool for like an indie band or whatever, but like, I wanted something that people who listen to that music actually like. So I was just like running it by him, and I'm like, does this sound? And he gave me little ideas. Like, there's like a little pause of like the kick drum halfway through. He's like, I feel like people need to breathe for a second. I was like, cool. He was like giving me like the, how it would play in like in an actual like dance music environment. So yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely going to grab that and add that to my DJ tracks.
You're putting it in your DJ bag.
Yeah. I'm putting it in the
crate.
I just like through the grapevine heard that some people who know DJs have played that out, and that's like amazing to hear.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that must be very satisfying to hear. I would feel very proud to hear anything mine was on the dance floor.
That's extremely sick.
Have you thought about seeking remixes for it?
I have like complicated feelings about remixes though.
I think in this
world of dance music, it's obviously historied, very like esteemed tradition. But I think in general, I just kind of feel like no one cares about remixes. Like,
well, I mean, I do.
I don't know. I just feel like, I don't know. If people would like to hear a remix, that'd be great. I just feel like it's hard enough to get someone to listen to your band for like the real stuff.
Yeah.
Being like, here's some remixes. But I think they would sound great. I'm just trying to like view it from the outside. I'm like, does anyone really want to hear a remix of my song?
You have at least two people who would like to Well, okay, so here's the I guess maybe a remix question. Like, is it, especially like as a one person band, is it freaky to then hand off a song and put it in someone else's hands? And like, what if you don't like the remix? Can you turn it down, or is it kind of like, all right, whatever happens?
Yeah, I mean, I did a song with this artist called Ford last year. And he got a remix by someone called Bay Ledges, and he sent it to me and was like, I got our song remixed. And there was that fear. But then I opened it and I loved the remix.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is sick. Always a dog, always a dude, no way is now better too. Always a dog, always a dude, no way is now better too. But there was that fear of like, my name's about to be on something that I didn't have any say in.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, I'm trying to be better about that. Like being so precious about, yeah. Yeah. Also, just to go back to what I was hinting at before, the idea is to make a fully electronic thing.
Hell yeah.
And start splitting off the styles, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm imagining the Marvel release plan, Matt.
Yeah.
You know, that, like phase that, three.
But yeah. It would still be under the Beacon School name.
It would be. And then we would just like in an ideal world release them at the same time. Like a double.
That sounds great.
See, like a little bit of a Bright Eyes, a Digital Ash and a Digital Urn versus I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning kind of moment.
Yeah. Or like a speaker box thing, Love Below thing. But I'm doing both.
Molly and I were recently joking that you're moderately successful indie act, and you're about to record your third album. Choose a specialty, and one side is pedal steel guitars, and one side is synthesizers.
Exactly.
But you're gonna say you can choose both.
Why not both?
Exactly. I always used to joke that like a great grift would be joining a band as a keyboard player, like when they start. And like, but you're like not doing really doing anything. You're just kind of like
doing the pads.
And then you're like, just wait. Like,
yeah.
By the time the third album comes, we're all going to be looking at me.
I'm going to have the modular rack of
exactly.
Synths. Yeah.
I saw a press release that was like, I couldn't believe I was reading it. It was like, this time we decided to ditch the guitars and go more for synths.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, am I reading this? Like that's every band of all time.
Shocking.
Yeah, exactly. Like, whoa.
Oh, you're inspired by the 80s this time? You're touching
exactly.
on some 80s sounds? Whoa,
exactly.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Can we do a gear corner? What are you rocking with? What do you got right now? You're watching pedal videos. What's your loadout? What's your board look like?
So yeah, I'm pretty much entirely in the box as far as synths go. I don't have a synth. I have my MIDI keyboard that's controlling. I've got my monitors. I put pretty much all my outboard gear is guitar pedals.
Okay.
That I can run stuff through. Like, let me see.
All right.
I guess this doesn't work for people who can't see, but we've got two rows of guitar pedals.
Oh yeah.
So I just bought this. This is the Deer Hunter pedal that makes you sound like Deer Hunter.
Ooh. Love it.
I turned it on and the first preset was like a Deer Hunter song. Like literally.
Wait, like, did the Deer like, Hunter guys manufacture that pedal?
They didn't, but they might as well have. No one cared about it until Bradford Cox put it on like everything. For those listening at home, it's the Eventide pitch factor. Yeah, then I just got like all my little delays and reverbs and basically just like when you work in the box, like i.e. in the computer, stuff can sound too perfect and sterile. So I will run it back through, you know, real pedals and amps just to kind of make it sound,
Now, will you be bringing all of that stuff out when you play live, or are you working
definitely
on like
a
consolidated setup?
Yeah, I'm probably using like 3 guitar pedals. Live.
Okay.
There's like a ton of like redundancies there. There's like 4 reverbs. Definitely.
Well, you need your little flavors of reverb.
Exactly. I had to put like the big buttons on them because I'm just like tap dancing, trying to trigger stuff. You can buy these, pedal toppers or button toppers that make the buttons a little easier to hit.
That answers the question that I had about pedals, and I'm just like, what if you miss? Or like, what if your shoes are too chunky? Like, what do you do? There you go.
You fuck up for a second, I guess. I think, the really successful people have someone backstage who just does it all for them.
Mm.
Ooh,
who's just triggering, who's like basically stepping on the pedals for them.
The wizard behind the curtain. Damn.
Yeah. Exactly.
Are there any pedals that you are like a hater of, or you think are overrated? Is this part of pedal culture?
I'm sure it is. I like they're pretty expensive. So I can't I guess there's like a whole world of people who buy them and flip them, but I think because whenever I've bought one, I've spent money on it, I'm like, I like this. This is good. I love this.
That's the same. That's the same rationale for when I bought like the Hoobastank record that had The Reason on it when I was a kid. I'm like, exactly. I spent $20 on this, and therefore it's my new favorite album. Because it has to be,
exactly.
Otherwise I don't know what I'm doing here.
Or on those same lines, you find yourself being compelled to figure out a way to use it on the record.
Exactly. Mm. I had one recently that I did sell. It was like this vocal pedal that I could not make work with my voice. That was the only time I've given up. But to be honest, most of them are good, and most of them do the same shit. The pedals, I cannot believe how many different manufacturers there are making the same effects, and quite literally the same effects, because there's like some tried and true kind of methods that are literally the same materials used,
same circuit, same transistors, just different box.
Exactly. So I really, that's the thing. I think I was watching a Jay Maskus video recently, and he was like, I like pedals. He was talking about, I like when you can hear when a pedal turns on, and they were like, and I'm the same way. It's like, I don't want like one where you like see like the mid boosts like ever so slightly. It's got more presence. I'm like, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it should feel like the pedal thing. I always feel like, at least when I'm playing, it should feel like turning on the nitrous in your race car,
totally.
You know, like where
exactly.
It's like, all right, now I'm about,
or, you know,
I'm playing this lick, but now I'm about to go to space.
The Rolling Stones, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, where you hear it go like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But I say all this and I'm still watching all these YouTube videos. Luckily the like YouTube scene of guitar effects has like finally caught up to modern sensibilities as far as what they're demoing. Like,
okay,
but it used to just be dads playing blues riffs.
Yeah,
and you're like, I think I could use that. But I have this organ pedal, the B9, and it makes your guitar sound like an organ.
Cool.
And I bought it to make like ambient swells and stuff, and I'd seen that this Stars of the Lid used it. And then you go on the demo video and it's just like boom, bam, 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 bam. like guys trying to play like organ with it. Like,
oh my God.
And I like really goofy, almost like circus music. And I'm like, that's not what I'm trying to use it for. So there's a little bit of filling in the blanks there. You're like, okay, but if I played cool stuff, would it sound cool?
Yeah. I think that's some of the fun of like working with that stuff is, with all equipment, the goal is to learn to master it enough that you can then break it in a creative way to make it do things that it wasn't necessarily designed to do, but you can use in your own way. At least that's how I always try to go about the stuff that I have. And usually when I find it the most like interesting.
Totally. Yeah. The bummer with that, like I said, Eventide Pitch Factor is like I said, Deer Hunter and Bradford Cox have so thoroughly cracked that pedal.
They've explored like, every facet.
There's literally articles online that list every preset they used.
Holy shit.
And like I turned it on and I was like, this sounds awesome. And then I was like, wait, this reminds me of something. And I was just playing a Deer Hunter song. And yeah, I was like, man, that guy didn't go past preset number two. And he didn't tweak anything. He just, but you know, he was the first one to do it. So
damn.
Props.
Fucking Deer Hunter. The only other question I have is, what's up with Max Band? You have a new album coming out next year.
That's right. Yeah, Max Band's my band with Max from Parquet Courts. We have a record we finished in February, and now we're just kind of very slowly trying to figure out how to release it.
Okay.
Parquet Courts is on a little hiatus right now. So Max is in DC where he lives. He's actually, I don't know if he wants me to share what he's doing.
We can always cut.
Yeah. He's teaching high school math right now.
Cool.
Like actually, open the schools. So he's tied up for the rest of the school year. I'm going to text him and make sure he doesn't.
Yeah, that's fine.
We can cut it out afterwards.
We'll cross check.
Yeah. So like we have the record done. We're just trying to figure out what to do with it. It's cool. And then, yeah, I think one idea as I play some shows in the Northeast with a Beacon School to do like a double duty kind of thing and have Max Band open. So ooh. I would play in both bands. Yeah, for a very small subset of people, I'd be like the dream lineup, you know. both of my bands. But yeah, we're just kind of trying to wait to see how to best release that record.
Very exciting.
It's called Max Band on Ice.
Okay. Okay.
Great.
And it's good. It's like mostly Max. I sing on one song. Our friend, our guitar player Tim sings on one. So it's a real three vocal approach. Actually, our drummer sings on one. He's got four vocals on there.
It's like the damn Beatles over here.
You know, you said it, not me. But
pull that as a blurb on the put it that in the press release.
Read if you like the Beatles.
Yes.
Yeah, honestly, for fans of the Beatles. Honestly, that would
just
be a
put
bold
that on the
move.
Top of every press release.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you know what the thing is, the Beatles covered so much ground. You're probably going to find some similarities somewhere. It's not total bullshit.
That's true, actually. It's a pretty wide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wide swath.
Well, this has been lovely talking to you, and congrats on the new record with Beacon School, and then eventually congrats on the new Max Band record. You know, as you've said multiple times, it's just about getting people to check out the music. Where's the best place to check out the music?
The internet, baby. Spotify. You know, follow me on Instagram. Gotta get those numbers up.
Juice
the numbers.
Numbers. Hell
YouTube,
yeah.
YouTube, look up the John video. It's good.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of people who play in the band, John is actually named after my friend who played drums in the band.
Nice.
That is the titular John.
That is the titular John.
Well, we'll try to include some links to your Spotify profile, or if you have like your tour dates up anywhere.
We'll try. We'll do it.
Yes.
That's a promise.
Yeah. Look up the tour dates. We'll be in a major city, probably near you. I'm sorry if we're not, if you live in Florida. I get that one sometimes. Not coming to Florida, sorry.
It's hard to do. It's so long.
America is also very large. Like, yes. I don't know if anyone realizes how big the landmass is, but it's pretty hard to like get from one place to another, especially with a bunch of gear.
I know. Well, yeah. I just found out because we have to go from Portland to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that's far. It's really far.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, I'm so used to the Northeast, where it's like Philly, DC, a couple hours, boom.
Yeah,
it's crazy out there.
Yeah, if you live in one of those major metropolises, not near any other major metropolises, sorry, it's your fault.
Suck it.
move to a exactly. megacity.
Find a more dense area.
Yes.
Man.
Come to us. We yeah. get that a lot.
Yeah.
I flew from whatever to see you. I'm like, wow, that makes me feel kind of guilty. But thank you. I had this idea. I think it's like, I feel like the idea, the reverse tour, you know, I feel like LCD Sound System has
yeah,
really cornered this idea. We'll be here.
Residency.
If you want to come see us, we'll be here. Like, you come to me.
Yeah. yeah. Plan a trip around it.
It's like the Vegas residency has now gone nationwide, which, you know, the Sphere will be the next version of that. Yeah. Just like I'm not going to you. You need to come to the Sphere.
Yes.
I'm so jealous of those just from a logistics perspective. Like,
yeah.
I was just thinking how nice it must be to like leave all your gear set up and be like, let's go out. And then you like come back the next day and you're like, turn on the amp, like, let's go. Like,
yeah.
Drums are all mic'd. Like, sounds good.
Well,
exactly.
Maybe that's how we'll start signing off all of these artist interviews, which is we'll see you in the Sphere.
Yes, see you there.
See you in the Sphere.
All right, thank you so much for chatting
with us.
Thank you,
Patrick. Thanks for chatting. This has been delightful.
Thank you, guys.
And maybe see you in LA if dates line up. You said April
25th.
Do you remember Thursday. Where you're playing off the dome?
Permanent Records.
Sick.
Roadhouse?
Permanent Records Roadhouse.
Yes, Roadhouse.
Haven't been, but that's great news for us because I don't think that's very far.
Great.
And in LA, no one goes anywhere other than where they live.
I consulted with my LA people because everyone I know lives there now. yeah, and like we had some other place downtown and they were like, don't do that. So yeah, apparently this one's cool.
Hell yeah. That was the episode. Patrick, thank you so much for coming on. What a delight. Go listen to A Beacon School. It will be the soundtrack for your life. The soundtrack to your life. The soundtrack of your life. Love prepositions. In this house? All right, sick. A Beacon School. They are going on tour. He is going on tour. They are going on tour. In April, this episode will come out before those shows. So maybe you can get a ticket if you live where he's playing. April 12th in Philadelphia, April 13th in Washington, D.C., April 14th in New York, April 19th in Seattle, April 20th, that's 420 Blaze It in Portland, Oregon, not a bad place to be there for that time, April 24th in San Francisco, April 25th in Los Angeles, and April 27th in Costa Mesa. Wow, wow, wow. Go visit a Beacon School's socials to check out those tour dates and stream so Patrick can go get more Dunkin' Donuts. We can all get more Dunkin' Donuts. I want Dunkin' Donuts right now. Thank you for listening to the podcast and introducing. We love you. @intropod is the Twitter. @gmail.com is the email. SoundCloud is soundcloud.com/and-intro-pod. We are here. We are recording. We're listening. We're learning. Hit us up. Leave us a review if you're nice. Don't leave us a review if you're nasty. Thanks as always. Okay, see you for the next episode. Goodbye.